Welcome back to Never Found, Never Forgotten. I'm your host, Melanie. And this week I'm going to tell you about maybe one of the most bonkers cases I've ever told you. Well, that's probably not true, but it involves satanic cults, so it's certainly up there. And it's spooky season, so we'll talk about satanic cults. This is the bizarre disappearance of 17-year-old Kelly Wilson from Gilmer, Texas. Kelly was last seen leaving work at the Northeast Texas Video Store on Buffalo Street at 8:30 p.m. on Sunday, January 5th, 1992. And she was supposed to head around the corner to the bank to make the night deposit and then head home for the night. But Kelly didn't make it home that night. The next morning at 6 a.m., Kelly Carlson called John Henry, her manager at the video store, and asked if he had seen Kelly. And John said he hadn't seen her since they closed up the night before. And around that same time, Kelly's stepdad found her car parked in the lot of the video store. And one of the tires was slashed. Kathy immediately called police to report her daughter missing. Gilmer Police Sergeant James York Brown, a 14-year veteran of the police force, was put in charge of the investigation into Kelly's disappearance. Immediately, they look at the car, and inside the car, they see that Kelly's belongings, including her purse, were still in the car. The only thing that was missing were her car keys. And so they knew that she was supposed to head to the bank, so they check the surveillance video of the bank, and they see that a deposit was made, someone made the deposit, but the video footage was too unclear to see if it was made by Kelly or someone else. I mean, it's 1992. I mean, here in 2021, we can't tell surveillance footage sometimes if it's, you know, a male or female making a deposit or doing whatever. This is 1992. Who knows who was making that deposit? But the deposit was made. We know that. The deposit was there. Kelly was dating Chris Denton. So naturally, the police look into Chris. And when they start digging a little bit, they learn that Chris is known for his hot temper. And not only that, he didn't get along with Kelly's previous boyfriend. But they can't find any evidence or any link to him at all in Kelly's disappearance. Leads begin drying up, but Robbie Wilson, Kelly's dad, and his wife Waverlin, who actually lived across the border in Louisiana, said that Sergeant Brown didn't give up. He put ads in the local newspaper to raise money for a billboard to raise awareness for Kelly's disappearance and to help generate leads. And Brown was looking into a theory, and this theory involved the fact that Kelly may have run away. Kelly's parents were divorced, and Joe Henry, the manager of the video store, had told investigators that Kelly had confided in him that she was really conflicted about where she should be living. She felt a lot of pressure about where to live, whether to stay in Texas with her mom and her stepdad or to move to Louisiana with her dad and her stepmom. And so Sergeant Brown theorized that maybe this family pressure led Kelly to run away. But then in January 1994, 2 years after Kelly's disappearance, it was announced that a grand jury was indicting Sergeant James Brown, as well as seven others, on charges of Kelly's abduction and presumed murder. Now, I wasn't in Gilmore, Texas in 1994, but I have to imagine that everyone was thinking, what the heck? Why is the lead investigator being charged in connection with this crime? Who are the others involved? And what is the connection to Kelly? Like, what is going on here? What is happening? As more details emerge, prosecutors alleged that Brown and members of the Kerr family kidnapped and imprisoned Kelly and then tortured and sexually abused her before killing her as part of a satanic ritual. But how did it come to this? And what was their evidence? The other members indicted in the case were members of the Kerr family. And all the accounts describe this family as, quote, country people or hillbillies. I'm using air quotes there. They were definitely marginal members of the community, and they lived in extreme poverty in shacks and old trailers, and they eked out a living on government assistance and odd jobs that they could find and sort of patch together. And they did have a history of sexual abuse and child molestation. Back in 1990, Wendell Kerr wanted to divorce his wife, Loretta. And so, according to his brother, Cloy, Loretta accused Wendell of abusing their children. And Wendell was eventually convicted of child molestation and sentenced to probation. But Ann Gore, a state child welfare worker, was assigned to this case, and she concluded that other members of the Kerr family were also sexually abusing their children as well. And over a period of a few years, more than a dozen children were removed from the custody of the family and taken into protective custody by Ann Gore and another child welfare worker, Debbie Minshew. According to court documents, it was not limited to sexual abuse, but also satanic practices. Ann Gore alleged that during one visit to the property, a child showed her the location where they became, quote, devil people, end quote. So Ann Gore and Debbie Minshew took their findings to the district attorney, but he recused himself from the case because he had a conflict of interest, as he had previously represented some of the potential defendants. And he recommended Scott Lyford as a special prosecutor. The social workers backed Scott Lyford, saying that he had experience in handling cases involving satanic cults. I don't know how many cases you have in Gilmore, Texas, with satanic cults, you know, like, he apparently had experience dealing with these satanic cults. I don't know what kind of experience that would be, but they liked him for the job. So this is bad for a couple of reasons. First, in Texas and many other states, the district attorney is an elected position. And so, as one article I read pointed out, elected officials are held to different standards of operation. They are accountable to voters and taxpayers. And I know this doesn't often seem to matter much, but it does. It really does. And it's important to our democracy that our elected officials are accountable to their constituents and that the people we elect are doing the jobs that we elected them for. And second, there are rules and ways to appoint special prosecutors. So when a district attorney has to recuse himself, you can't just be like, yeah, I like that guy. And third, the fact that the social workers were like, yeah, I like that guy. That's the guy with this. He's got experience with satanic cults. Like, what the heck? That's not how it works anywhere. And after the fact, the regional manager of the child welfare agency even said that having gotten the prosecutor that they wanted, Ann Gore and Debbie Minshew overstepped their professional boundaries. You think? A little bit. Ann Gore was allegedly present when Lyford went to collect Sergeant Brown's records, and defendants attested that she was there while they were being interrogated, which, again, overstepping those professional bounds. Lyford was digging for stories, and he was trying to find any evidence to back up the stories of torture and human sacrifice, but, surprise, surprise, couldn't find any. Apparently, they did find this bone on the property near where Ann Gore said the child had taken her to show her where they do the devil worship. But lab tests showed that it was an animal bone and it was likely like 150 years old. So, not part of a devil worship sacrifice. So, you're probably wondering, but how did Sergeant Brown get involved in this alleged satanic cult? Well, I'll tell you. Apparently, he heard a rumor that Kelly Wilson had been kidnapped and killed as part of a satanic practice happening with the curse. Now, Gilmore, Texas, it's really small. It's a small town, and you know what happens in small towns. Rumors, that's right. And so Sergeant Brown had heard this rumor that Kelly was kidnapped and part of the satanic ritual that happened with this Kerr family. So he's like, I'm going to check this out. Well, when Lifer, this special prosecutor, caught wind of this, he threatened Brown, and he allegedly told him to stay out of the investigation or he would ruin him politically, professionally, and financially. Just one month later, that's when a grand jury, under the special prosecutor's direction, indicted Brown and the others. But, of course, there wasn't really any evidence to support these charges, and one suspect, Michael Bilby, was charged with slashing Kelly's tire after he admitted it, but he maintains that he knows nothing of Kelly's disappearance or whereabouts. All the other charges against the other individuals, including those against Sergeant James Brown, were dropped just weeks later. But the case tore the town apart. Many thought Brown was innocent, and many thought he was guilty. One local newspaper reported, quote, "Some folks say James Brown is as innocent as Snow White. Others think he's our Charles Manson," end quote. Kelly disappeared in 1992, and this is like the height of satanic panic. And so I was looking into this a little bit, this idea of satanic panic, which seemed to begin in 1980 with the release of a book called Michelle Remembers by Lawrence Pazder. And it spread across the country and really the world. And one article I read summed it up really well. It said, quote, "At their core, satanic ritual abuse claims relied on overzealous law enforcement, unsubstantiated statements from children, and above all, coercive and suggestive interrogation by therapists and prosecutors," end quote. And I have to believe that this might be what was at play here. I also have to think that the social workers might have had some implicit bias against this family that caused them to focus so hard on them. If there really was sexual abuse, then absolutely those children should have been removed and those adults should be prosecuted with the fullest strength of the law with no mercy. But one article I read said that the sexual abuse cases never even went to trial for this. So I have to wonder how much of that was fabricated as well. Was there enough evidence to even support those claims? And socioeconomic bias is very real, and people are treated less than because of their income status all the time. And especially in positions of power like this with social workers. Another article said, quote, "The case brought unwanted national attention to the East Texas town, attention that geared more toward controversy, cults, and cops being convicted, and less on Kelly Wilson," end quote. And at the end of the day, that's what matters, is that Kelly Wilson is still missing and we still don't know where she is. Still to this day in 2021, we still don't know where she is. In 2004, Chris Denton, Kelly's boyfriend at the time of her disappearance, passed away from cancer. He maintained his innocence until the very end, despite rumors of a deathbed confession. But I think people just love this idea of deathbed confessions. But there was no truth to that at all. In the same year, 2004, Joe Henry, the owner of Northeast Texas Video, and the last person to see Kelly alive, was arrested and charged with child pornography. Police say that despite the nature of the charges against him in 2004, he was never considered a suspect in Kelly's disappearance. Kelly Wilson was 17 years old, 5'7" tall, and weighed 120 pounds. She was a Caucasian female with blonde hair and blue eyes. She wore contacts and a wire retainer on her lower teeth. She had pierced ears. Her hair was naturally brown, but she bleached it prior to her disappearance, and it was growing out and had brown roots. Anyone with information on the disappearance or whereabouts of Kelly Wilson can contact the Gilmer Police Department at 903-843-5543. That's my episode today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for listening again. Let me know what you think of Satanic Panic. I'd love to know your thoughts. You can connect with me on social media. I'm on Twitter, @PodNever, Facebook, Never Found, Never Forgotten Pod, or send me an email, recommend some cases, neverfoundneverforgottenpod@gmail.com. Until next week, bye. Thank you.